So the next feature in the journey, next landscape to enter into is tranquility. And in a few different lists, tranquility follows joy. And it's a wonderful partner to joy because joy has a little bit of excitement in it. And so to have that excitement become to quiet, to calm, opens up a new vista in the practice. And tranquility, calm, serenity, peace is a wonderful companion to the practice. It supports the practice, it guides the practice, it leads the practice onward. So tranquility here is not a dullness, it's not a numbness, it's not a, going asleep, it's not a kind of good, easy, we're just going to cruise along here. It isn't a place where nothing matters, so whatever, it's fine. The tranquility is alive. There's aliveness to it. There's often a kind of clarity to it. There's almost like it has energy, like it's energized. And I say almost because maybe it's not quite that, almost that, but it's certainly not a lack of energy. It's certainly not having too little energy. It's just maybe it's just like just the right energy in some way. So the energy is just right, so it disappears. You can't see it. Something like that. And so the first kind of the five kind of deepenings of tranquility is to recognize it, is to have some familiarity with it. And in the beginning of the practice, there might be no state of tranquility that we can recognize. But the important thing we can recognize is that we can relax. The word that I use is relax. In the Pali, it's more technically called tranquilize, make tranquil. I like the verb to calm. And that's something sometimes we can do. We can relax tense muscles. We can soften the shoulders. We might be able to relax the belly. My early years of Zen practice, it was a regular practice of me to relax my tense belly. I didn't make it an ongoing project. I was content that in one 40-minute period of Zen meditation, I would relax it maybe two or three times. And so just, and then, but you know, I sat so many periods of 40 minutes that probably the accumulated effort of that kind of began to change something drop by drop. And slowly my belly started to be relaxed more and more until it kind of didn't need to be relaxed anymore. And as I said in the beginning of the retreat, that was the Buddha's beginning instructions for mindfulness, is to know your breathing, feel the body, the whole body as you breathe, and then relax the body. Calm the body, help the body to become tranquil. And so in that regard, there's something called tranquility of the body. That the body can, real feeling of the body, there can be a feeling of a lightness in the body. There can be a feeling of clarity, feeling of being open, porous, kind of this clarity where there's no edges to the clear space around you almost. Or it might be more centered in some parts of the body. And it feels maybe a feeling of healthiness, feeling very healthy in the body. And then there's the calmness of the mind, tranquil mind. And especially there, I liken it a lot to the calm surface of a lake. And for me, I've had some very significant, I didn't realize it at the time, but some of my experiences early in my life turned out to be like food for me or something, or they had a big impact on me in ways I didn't realize until years later. And they kind of, almost like they shaped me, or, you know, it's in my bones or my muscles. And I've gone back to some of these places as an adult and surprised by those feelings are there. When I thought that's where I first felt this in a powerful way. And one of the things that happened with my early years of Zen practice, I had recovered memories. Wonderful. Usually people think that's bad news. But recovered memories, I started having some feelings of calm or tranquility. And I said, oh, I remember this when I was 6 years old. I would take this white sheet and cover the kitchen table that went all the way down to the floor. And then I'd go underneath the white sheet. There was a particular time of day when the sun would come in through the window and fill this under the table area with light. And it was so clean and clear and calm that there was like complete tranquility. And I'd feel so cozy and safe there. And I would just sit there and just, I don't think I did anything. I don't know what I did. Just took in the peace, tranquility. And so as I did Zen meditation, this is what I know. This is my under the table feeling. Wow, cool. And so recovered memory, remember that. And another one that is that of being either on a boat, being from Norway, there was a lot of time on boats, and being on a boat and waking up early in the morning, dawn, and there's no wind, and the fjord is completely still, the water, not a ripple, and blue sky and lots of clarity, and everything seemed like was in order, was at peace in the world. And as a kid, I would take that in. I just loved sitting there and just, I don't even know what I was gazing at. Maybe, where do you see peace? So my eyes couldn't really, probably didn't focus on any particular thing. It was just kind of like, the eyes were just roaming gently, softly over the landscape, over the water. And so these metaphors, these analogies for me, you know, speak to my own experience of mental calm, mental tranquility. And one of the things that I started learning when I was introduced to Vipassana practice, where there was a strong emphasis on knowing in a way that it didn't have in Zen, was, and I was introduced to this kind of more emphatic knowing called mental noting and labeling, was I learned after a while that even if I didn't feel calm, if I felt agitated and my body was troubled and I had lots of challenges, and that I started paying attention to how I noted, how I knew something. And I could, even if I was totally certifiably agitated and anxious, I could somehow reorient myself, my mind. I could kind of bring my mind to be calm as I knew, as I noted, a calm noting. I could adjust myself. At least I can, when I'm going to note something, I'm going to note it calmly. And it's the kind of adjustment that maybe a person can make. Maybe you've done this too. In the old days, when you'd go into a library, and you would go up to the librarian to speak, and you would go very quietly. It was like the most natural thing in the world to be quiet in the library. And so it's a quiet voice. And one of the great experiences of tranquility, where it was completely natural, if there was going to be any speaking at all, it would be so calm and slow and tranquil. Like, of course, was going into my kids' preschool when they were napping. It's like one of the most precious things in the world is a room full of napping preschoolers. Like, you don't want to mess with that. It's so important to keep them quiet. I mean, not important to keep them quiet, but it's just like so precious. And the consequences if they wake up sometimes. In fact, my older son, his whole academic career started off terribly. Maybe it was like, was this going to be like a foretelling of what was in store? He was expelled from preschool the first week. I mean, like, just don't come back. Because he woke up during the nap and woke all the kids up. It was a little bit weird that this is how the preschool teacher treated him. But she didn't want to have anyone, you know, disturbing. So he didn't get a second chance. Well, that's how beginning of his academic life. I don't think he remembers, but his parents recovered. So this noting, even if you're agitated, can you calmly know it? Can you reorient yourself? Could you somehow shift things in your mind? Can you find kind of in your back room of your mind some place to calm? I remember also the same son. When he was probably in third grade, we realized he was dyslexic. And so we had this dyslexia program he did for it. And it seemed to have made a big difference. But the biggest thing was when his dyslexia was assist, he was very visual, and his visual field would start spinning sometimes in his mind somehow. And there were times when it looked like he was possessed. It was really something to see, kind of a different mind would take over. But his dyslexia program taught him how to get oriented. And it was that he would imagine he had a green light in the back of his head, and he would take a deep breath, and he'd imagine that from this green light, he would breathe out and send his light going straight out in front of him to focus on something. And there were times where he was, I think it would probably okay, appropriate to call it crazed, possessed or something with this condition. And we would tell him, orient. And he would stop, stand tall, take a deep breath, and then he could do this long exhale. And when he finished his exhale, he was back to who he normally was. It's quite something that he could make that adjustment. So there's a way sometimes that we can make some kind of adjustment in our mind. We can turn things around. We don't have to be stuck just because this is the state that we're in. This is who I am, thank you. That this has to be how it continues. There might be some healthy and very appropriate way to make an adjustment with the mind. And the adjustment I'm suggesting is the one that you can maybe have the most ability to adjust is how you know. And maybe this is where mental noting can be helpful. If you ever should get close to feeling crazed, is, crazed. Let me really focus on that. Oh, it's just being crazed. That's all. Just say it in a calm way. Not that any of you are crazed, but maybe agitated. Or maybe you hear a sound and you say, oh, sound. Because there can be very subtle ways in which the way we talk to ourselves, the way we feel and sense and know has been influenced by the mood music. And so then we hear a sound and it's not just a sound, it's sound and fear. What's that? What's that sound? Or there is a sound, and is that something good that I want? Sound comes out of the kitchen. Oh, are they doing cookies? So there's the knowing can get excited. It can be agitated. There can be a little tensing going around it. So can you begin finding an appropriate, healthy way to adjust how you know? How you're mindful, so that brings along a little bit of calm, a little bit of tranquility. Can that do, or can it be an orientation, a settling? Okay, here I'm going to be, not just know it in some kind of dutiful way, just as a technique, but can I know whatever I'm knowing in the present moment, could I know it in a way that has me oriented, or in our language, maybe being focused, concentrated? Can I really know it? And use the knowing as a settling, calming way of really connecting to what's there. Pain, suffering we have. Can suffering be known calmly? And then to appreciate whatever calm you have. And so the first thing is to recognize it's there or bring it forth. And then to support it, to support the calm. And calm can be supported by relaxing. The Buddha's teachings, they talk about tranquility of the body and tranquility of the mind. And so you kind of think that then there's two separate things, mind and body. And that's a whole philosophical, metaphysical issue. But I think I've said this already, that I think the mind is different than the brain. I think the mind is wherever the nervous system is in the body, the nervous network, the nerve network. So wherever, even at the end of the fingertips, if there's nerves there that pick up sensations, then the mind is there as well. And so the mind is actually this almost the same as your body, in the sense that the mind is the same as the body that you can experience. If you have a felt sense experience of your body, there your mind is. Because that's where your nerves are. You're not going to sense and feel your body without there being nerves. And so this kind of broad, and the reason I'm mentioning it now is that the mind and body are kind of intimately connected and communicating back and forth. So if there's a relaxing of the body, calming of the body, it will calm the mind. If there's calming of the mind, it will relax the body. And so these work together. So recognizing calm of the body, recognizing calm of the mind is very important. The Buddha said that the way to develop calm is to recognize calm. The literally way in which he talked about it, he said, the nourishment of tranquility is tranquility. So if you have some beginning of feeling calm, to take time to know that, take time to feel that. Because if you don't, then you miss the nourishment that can come from calm. And so actually calm grows as you're nourished by it, as you take it in, let it fill yourself. So one way to support the growth of calm is to recognize it well. Feel it in the body, feel it in the mind, feel it in how you know, now you're aware. So there is recognizing the calm, there's supporting calm to grow, and then there's a more of appreciation, not of the particular sensations of calm, but what can be called a state of calm. And a lot of these things are states more than particular events. One of the interesting things about studying, practicing Vipassana, especially in Burma, in the early years in which I practiced, it was so, and that probably some of you know this, it was so object-focused. Like every moment of mindfulness was supposed to have an object. And so there was so like the object was pain, the object was an in-breath, was a sensation of in your body, the object is a sound. And so it's some people point out that this Mahasi practice is very object focused, and in a sense it's true, but what tends not then to be included are those things that don't make specific objects. There, and these are the states we can have. If you look around this room at the space in the room, it doesn't really work to stare at the space. You'll lose the space if you stare at it. Your eyes will get cross-eyed or something. But your eyes have to float in the room, kind of move gently, and you can kind of know there's space here. But space is not an object that's specific to a moment of seeing. It's the absence of objects in a sense. So it's more like a state than it is as a singular object. So there's a whole class of things that we can experience in our body mind, which are not specific objects of attention that you can kind of just know precisely and sense directly. But you can still know them with a wider mind. So there's states that we have. So something like faith tends to be more like a state, or confidence is more like a state. And certainly joy can have a lot of particular, and gladness and appreciation can have a lot of particular things you can know about it, but also it's a broader thing, it's a gestalt. That feels like more like a state. Tranquility is more like a state. So at some point, the deepening of Vipassana practice is supported by being nourished by these states, appreciating, taking them in. And it supports this idea that it's not all just a mental exercise. It's not like you have to, just kind of get yourself revved up. And there was a school of Vipassana that existed a little bit 10, 15 years ago in the United States, where the faster you noted, the faster you would get enlightened. So like speed noting was notes per minute. 0 to 60. I went 0 to 60 in 5 seconds. And that particular school of Vipassana had a lot of people who ended up in the psych wards. It wasn't very healthy for some people. But the opposite of that, these wonderful states that nourish us, that feeling of healthiness, feeling of goodness, feeling of wholesomeness. And so to take time, this like forest bathing, dipping into the lake and really feeling the state that's there of serenity, of peace, of calm, and taking that in and not missing it because you're trying so hard to do this noting practice or this just knowing this. But yes, no specifics. Get close to the specific sensations for sure. But you know, with the support of joy, with the support of appreciation, with faith, with support of tranquility. So again, for all this is very closely connected to suffering well. That's what we're looking to do here, to suffer well, to suffer better. Most of us suffer worse. That's what we know how to do. Very few people know how to suffer well. So to suffer, if you have suffering, and know it calmly. Know it peacefully. It's possible to know suffering and know it joyfully. Now we're talking about suffering better. And so today, this calm knowing of suffering, it's a world of difference from an agitated knowing of it. So then, you know, this tranquility can also be a state, and so it's also something we can allow ourselves to be immersed in. We can kind of settle into, open up into it. Aha, this is good. And then, so there's recognizing it, there's practicing with it, softening, relaxing. There is immersing yourselves into the state. And then there's being wise about it, just being discerning, to be able to really be skilled at what's going on, to know how to use the tranquility to further the practice. And one of the ways is that tranquility is a wonderful reference point for noticing the ways that you lose your tranquility. The more quiet and still the surface of the lake is, if there's no movement at all, then you'll see the little fish kind of pop up a little bit in a little circle of waves. But if it's really windy and choppy on the lake, the fish might be coming up all the time, but you never see it because it's so agitated, the water. So you can see something. So with the mind, you could see, for example, maybe you're pretty quiet and peaceful, and you might see certain thoughts arise, and you can feel that now it's, there's waves, there's agitation. And because you can see that you're better off without thinking, which you might occur to you, maybe I'll leave this alone. I'll let it pass. Let it pass through. And it goes. And things settle back down calm. The calm, it gives you a vantage point to see. If the agitated mind, if you have one more agitated thought, you know, you're not even going to notice you have it because that's just the nature of everything. But the calm can show you that maybe it's not necessary to be involved in that thought. You might have the world's most wonderful thought, but actually it's nicer to be calm than have that agitation of that thought. You might have the world's worst thought, certifiably worst thought that anybody's ever had in the world. That'd be quite an accomplishment. And you see it come. Why even care that it's the worst thought? Why get involved? Just let it pass. Let it go. Don't get involved. Because you know something better. To be at peace. To be tranquil. So because I have this weird thing, relationship to words, the word in Pali for tranquility is pasadi. It begins with P-A-S-S. So let it pass. I like that. It helps me. Remember, I just let it pass. Pasadi, let it pass. And so it's all kinds of things you'll see in that reference point to tranquility of how you lose a tranquility. And learning how you lose tranquility is a tremendous exercise in self-understanding. I don't think you can overstate how important it is to see what goes on inside of you that causes you to lose your peace, your tranquility, your ease. Because that's information that's so useful to understand the tricks, the magic of the mind. You know, that magic trick that the person has on stage can be fascinating to watch. How did that happen? It's just amazing. Until they explain how the trick is done. And then you're not interested anymore. Like, then it's like not so interesting. So by understanding how the magic of the mind works, you might not be so fascinated by some of the things that goes on in there. You leave it alone. So tranquility is a wonderful point in this practice where we understand, start seeing and understanding how we get caught, how we get attached, how we get resistance, how the mind moves in all kinds of ways. And that's valuable. It's not a mistake. It's the very thing that we want to be able to study and see more clearly. And it's also fascinating to see with a tranquil mind that there might be joy might arise, and you see that joy arise is just another wave. Just another splash in the surface. And then you might say, well, that's joy is good, but it was actually better to be peaceful. Oh, I've been trying to be joyful for decades. And now finally I know some, you know, I'm not going to pick up that joy because, I mean, it's disorienting for some people. But no, because you know something better. There's all kinds of things you start seeing are not needed when the mind is quiet and peaceful enough. One of them, which is fascinating, is interest. At some point, interest is really helpful in practice. To be interested, it keeps you engaged and involved. But at some point, when the mind is quiet and still enough, interest is too much. It's just another wave. Curiosity. Shouldn't we all be curious? Yes, until it's a hindrance. And so you say, oh, they can see, oh. And so why this is important in relationship to joy is that the joy factor, the pity factor, it can feel like it's completely natural and that we're innocent participants in it. But in fact, it's very easy, and it's almost part of this pity factor when it's strong, that we're actually a little bit encouraging it. We're leaning into it, and sometimes it's only because we're interested in it. There's interest in it, and so that's kind of keeping it going. And so to see the added interest, oh, I don't need to be interested, it's okay. Let that wave calm down. Curiosity. There's this kind of, you can see the excitement, which is a lot of waves. Just let's let the waves settle. Let's settle down. Let's not throw any more stones in the water to agitate it. Let's have it calm. So one of the ways that this important deepening of this practice in relationship to tranquility is to let the tranquility support you in seeing clear, more clearly, see what's happening more clearly. And it's because sometimes self-knowledge is not good news, it's very important to have to learn how to know calmly. Oh, look at that. I have a foible or two. It's just a foible. As opposed to, hope no one noticed. Maybe they'll kick me out of IRC because who knows? Because I wanted more broccoli. We get so excited and reactive. But just know, there's an extra thought. That's all. Jack Kornfield, maybe you know this, but there was a time he gave people the instructions to count how many distracted thoughts they had during a day. And it seemed to work really well for some people because by the time they get up to like 322, they just thought, this is ridiculous. And they would finally kind of, that was enough to keep the allure of their thoughts or the power of being involved with thoughts to dissipate. So, and then tranquility is onward leading. Tranquility in itself kind of shows you, if you're really sensitive to it, if you're really settled in it, quiet, you can sense that it's almost like there's a opening in it. There's an invitation in it here. There's almost like it's creating an opening. It's like calming something, it's settling something, and creating an opening for the new state to arise. Some new kind of opening to some possibility. Sometimes it's felt like it was the bottom for me, the bottom of a bowl, and now the ball had rested at the bottom, was poised. If the bottom of the bowl had a hatch, if that hatch opened, it would fall through. It would yes, it to a whole other world that was underneath there, and sometimes it's just like an opening, like the door is about to open or is opening. So I don't know if these kinds of language I'm using makes any sense for you in your experience. Everyone has a different way in which these things work, but that tranquility itself, if you're really present for it, will not feel like the end. Will not feel like, you know, that you won't get attached to it. You won't feel like it's that this is where it ends, the practice, but rather it just keeps going. It keeps opening. It keeps kind of feeling like, something is unfolding here. The drops from the rain have become streams, have become lakes, and they're overflowing the lakes, and now the water is down on the, maybe in flat plateau, and just moving along peacefully, quietly, tranquilly, but it is still moving. There's a flow in the peace. So perhaps it's nice we came to this tranquility stage of the Upanisa sequence, before a quiet day tomorrow. Maybe the IRC will feel a little bit more tranquil, or you'll have a little more tranquility than a day that's a little more spacious in the schedule. And I hope that you are nourished by any degree of calm, tranquility that you might experience. Within you, outside of you, or both. Thank you.